This is episode 11 of the Investors Podcast.
Broadcasting from Bel Air, Maryland, this is the Investors Podcast. They'll read the books and summarize the lessons. They'll test the waters and tell you when it's cold. They'll give you actionable investing strategies. Your host, Preston Pysh and Stig Brodersen.
All right, how's everybody doing out there? This is Preston Pysh, and as usual, I am accompanied by my co-host, Stig Brodersen. And today we're doing another book. This book is by Brad Stone, and it's called The Everything Store. Since Hari Ramachandra spends a lot of time out in Silicon Valley, because he lives there, and he also read this book, we brought him back on the show, and he is from bitsbusiness.com. And so we're going to be going through this book and we're going to be picking it apart. We could probably spend about five episodes on this book, but we're going to just narrow it down to this one and try to pick out the highlights and the high points for you. So let's start off. The book is really primarily about Jeff Bezos, who's the CEO and founder of Amazon. Jeff Bezos's net worth is $30.3 billion here in November, the middle of November 2014. The thing that I really took away from the book initially was just the intelligence level of Jeff Bezos. This is an extremely intelligent individual. And this is a person, like most billionaires, that thinks about things in a different perspective and typically sees things from the inverse that the rest of the world sees things. So the primary point and the highlight that I really want to bring out of the book initially, the biggest thing that I took away was this focus that Jeff Bezos has on the customer. And not necessarily the shareholders or the employees or anything else. He is totally focused on the customers of Amazon. So whenever I typically talk to people that are in a leadership position or a CEO of a business, the biggest challenge that these CEOs, these managers have is it's a big balancing act. And it's really a balancing act on three different levels. They have a balancing act where they've got to please their customers. They've got to please their employees and they've got to please their owners or their shareholders. And if you think about that three-prong approach to leadership within an organization, you can almost think of it like a tripod. And if that one of those legs in that tripod is not strong or it's weak, the whole thing is going to be out of balance and out of whack, and it's probably going to lead to unstable results within the business. And so when you read this book and you study Jeff Bezos, like Brad Stone had done, who's the author of this book, it was really interesting to me because this is a tripod, and whenever you see a good solid business, it's always really well balanced among those three prongs, the customers, the employees, and the owners. The way Jeff Bezos looked at things is he just totally flipped this around and said, you know what, I don't really care what the owners think. I'm not going to really be too concerned about the profit margins. I'm not really too concerned about working my employees too hard and giving them, you know, big bonuses like some of these companies like Goldman Sachs and whatever. He says, no, all I'm going to do is I'm going to put laser focus on my customer. If my customer's happy, everything else is going to work out. And so that's the thing that I just saw throughout this entire book is how laser focused Jeff Bezos is on his customer. So the thing that, you know, for Stig and myself, we have this website that talks about accounting. So for me, I initially go into the income statement, the balance sheet, cash flow statement for Amazon and start picking this thing apart. And so for me, I'm really interested in how a business can continue to grow its revenues at the rate that Amazon has done, but yet they don't have a bottom line that's really kind of feeding things that they can tap into in order to continue to grow their asset base. And so whenever we look at Amazon's income statement, let's just pull this up and look at this. So last year, 1 year ago, Amazon's revenues were $17 billion for that quarter. That's just one quarter. This past quarter here in 2014, they've continued to grow those revenues to $20.5 billion in revenues. Okay. Now that's really sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money. But the interesting part with Amazon is what's their profit on that $20.5 billion in revenues? And so whenever we look at the bottom line of their income statement, we see that they had a loss. They actually lost money to the tune of $437 million last quarter. So they're bringing in $20.5 billion and then they're losing $437 million. And if you look at their income statement for the last decade, you're going to see a very similar theme where they're just basically breaking even every single quarter. If they make a profit, it's only a couple hundred million dollars on billions that they're bringing in. So it's just a very interesting approach that you haven't really seen any other company operate in this model, in this direction, where it's just all focused on the customer.
Oh, definitely. And the one takeaway from the income statement, as you say, is definitely that they're not making any money. They're just really having a lot of revenue. But if we turn our attention to the balance sheet, I think that is even more interesting. Because I think you also briefly mentioned this, they don't have any retained earnings. And, you know, that's very logic because they're not making any money. So when you look at it, you can actually see that they have a lot of additional paid-in capital, which is probably quite unique given how big they are. And well, even though it's a new company, they still have existed for 20 years. Also, if you look at how the assets are composed, you can also see that they don't have that many fixed assets. They have a lot of current assets. That's also one of the reasons why they have been able to expand so fast, because that's financed by their current liabilities. So they have a lot of accounts payable, for instance. So it's a very interesting business model. Perhaps it's a bit too progressive to what I like to see, but I think it's a really interesting study.
So I started thinking about this as well, Stig. You brought up a great point about the balance sheet. So when you think about it, why does a company retain earnings? Okay, why do they do that? And really the answer is because they want to have that war chest of cash that they can employ whenever a new opportunity or a new market opens up that they think that they can employ that capital advantageously and grow. So Bezos has basically shifted this on its head and said, well, if I control enough flow of capital, if I control enough money through my organization, I can basically flex my profit margin in a short amount of time to quickly grow the capital that I need in order to employ it into whatever my next asset that I want to buy is, instead of just socking it away and sticking it over here in the corner and just letting it sit there, not really having a large return. His opinion is that let's just continue to grow the revenues. Let's grow the revenues. Let's grow the revenues. And then whenever I have an opportunity that I actually want to pounce on, I'll shift my prices. And if you notice on Amazon, the prices on Amazon are constantly fluctuating all the time. Every day it's a new price. And I think that they had that variability in their price because he can quickly bring in a 10 or 20% increase in the cost of something, call it for 15 days. He can generate millions of dollars in profit from that quickly and then employ that for whatever he's trying to buy next. And it's just this model is crazy. I've never seen anything like this. So Hari, I saw you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah. You brought up a very good point. In fact, Jeff talks about it. And even in the book, Brad Stone has touched upon this frugality and low margin mentality in Amazon. And Jeff has famously said that your high margins are my opportunity for any business around. Jeff, before he started Amazon or while he was founding Amazon, he read about Sam Walton, his biography, and he was very much influenced by how Sam was obsessed about cost and innovation. And Jeff has embodied that in his operations. In fact, in an interview, Jeff talks about what it takes to be in a low margin and high volume business. And in that interview, he says that companies with high margin have a luxury, but a lot of sins are hidden because of that.
Yeah, and it's very short term because, and this is something that he talked about later in the book, is he said that I view high margins of a business as something that attracts a lot of competitors. I don't want to attract a lot of competitors, so I keep my margins low. It's just like, you know, this is a lot like Peter Thiel. Everything that he thinks, he just takes the exact opposite. Like, well, you know, everyone out in business thinks high margins are good. He's of the opinion that they're bad. And then he somehow figures out a way to justify it. And then it's true in the way that he's employing this and growing. I just find it fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Go ahead, Stig, you had something you want to say?
Yeah. And I think he brings an example with Apple. Is he saying that Apple have high margins, but that's attracting a lot of competitors in terms of, for instance, the smartphones.
Yeah.
While low margins, that attracts customers. And that is the viable strategy.
Yeah.
Hari, I saw you had one thing before I took your word there.
No worries. In fact, he ties this low margin back to his customer centricity. He says that if I'm operating at low margin, it is good for my customers because I am delivering value to them in the end.
So it's funny, all this discussion kind of has me thinking of this particular piece in the book. It was early on, I want to say like maybe chapter two, and the employees were recalling this quote that Bezos had said during one of their meetings, and he said, "We don't make money when we sell things. We make money when we help customers decide on the right purchase." And it's just, I mean, it's just another thing. You're like, that, you know, most people, if they ever heard that, would think that guy's out of his mind. But then you look at what he's creating, and it's just, it's mind blowing. Hari, go ahead. You had something.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests to the maintenance to organizing the cleaners after every guest stay. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a data-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, homeowners earn on average 20% or more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa makes vacation home ownership easy. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home by doing less, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com. That's vacasa.com to get started on your dream of owning a vacation home. When Rainn Wilson had a great idea, he turned to AT&T Business. They assured him no matter how out there his idea may be, they had his back. So he came up with this, a talking pillow designed to put you to sleep, backed by a reliable network and the only network with built-in security controls. And thus, sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover Sport leads by example with their dynamic design that rises to the occasion. It's got powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capabilities, coupled with signature Range Rover refinement. The third-generation Range Rover Sport is the most desirable, advanced, and dynamically capable one yet, redefining sporting luxury. It's got advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, offering next-level comfort and refinement. The purposeful cockpit-light driving position sets the tone for a focused interior that promotes exhilarating driver engagement. Award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. You can enjoy a dynamic drive and total comfort with optional 22-way adjustable, heated, and ventilated electric memory front seats with massage function. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com.
All right, back to the show.
Kristen, you brought up a good point. In fact, while talking about Kindle, Bezos says that we sell Kindle at near break-even because we don't want to make money when we sell the product, but we want to make the money when the customer actually uses it. And that goes back to what Stig was talking about, how Apple has a huge margin there on their products, whereas Amazon just took the completely opposite approach.
So let's go ahead and move. So that was the first point that we all kind of extract out of the book, which was this idea that he is just absolutely focused on the customer and just, you know, his employees and from the shareholder or owner standpoint, it's just like they don't even exist. So that's really the first point we pulled away. So Stig has a second main theme that he found in the book that he wants to bring up.
I really like the thoughts about whether Amazon was a retailer or Amazon was a tech company. And that was something that was going on and on and on about the book. And to be honest, I think that's something that they are, if not struggling with right now, it's definitely something that is challenging them right now. Because they definitely started out as a retailer, and the way they were doing things was definitely as a retailer. So for instance, they were starting out with books because they said that books was a commodity. So that was something that all customers understood. And it was also, by the way, a low margin product. And they're thinking like retailer in terms of they want to have everything. It's really the everything store. And they have these funny stories about how they were building inventories by buying toys from the competitors. So it's really a like entering their shelves. So it's a really like a retailer way of thinking. But at the same time, they're thinking like a tech company. They now implemented big data. They want to, when they started developing Kindle, they didn't have any resources, internal resources, but simply, you know, build up a division that could build these Kindles. They are competing with Google about high-skilled programmers. So I think that what Jeff Bezos is actually doing is he's saying, you cannot put me in a box as a retailer, or you can't tell me that I have a tech company. I can actually take the best from both worlds. At least that's my interpretation. I don't know how you see that discussion going on.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear Hari's opinion out there in Silicon Valley. What's, you know, everyone out there say?
That's a good point, Stig. In fact, in the last chapter of the book, the author talks about how Amazon is moving from an everything store to an everything company. And if you look at the history of Amazon and how Jeff got the idea of Amazon, it was actually in his hedge fund, D.E. Shaw, where he was working for this charismatic leader. And the hedge fund was set up as a technology shop focusing on finances. And in fact, I think Bezos took that idea. And one of the ideas was actually everything store that was being discussed in the D.E. Shaw company. And that's how Amazon was born. Bezos is a computer graduate by education. So he is well aware of technology. He has expanded into a lot of areas that, you know, traditionally belong to, say, Googles and Apples of the world. But he had a lot of struggle in doing that. In Silicon Valley, he has set up two subsidiaries of Amazon, Lab 126 and A9. It has been a struggle, but it's catching up now. However, within the Valley, from my personal experience, Amazon is not among the top employers in terms of, you know, engineers' preference. If you look at some of their products, maybe the recent phone that they released, it's really hard to compare them with somebody like Apple or Google, the programmers. In the Valley, still, I think Google and Apple are treated as the A team.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, you know, mobile devices or application development. Amazon is getting there, but I don't think they're still in the same league.
Yeah, I don't think that their phone has been selling, the new phone that they just came out with has been selling as well as they would like. I don't know if it's really a branding issue, just. I really think there's so much stickiness with the iTunes for the phones and the applications, and same with the Droid, that I think it's very hard for them to step into that market. I mean, they are really going to have to practically give away, I think, a lot of applications for people in order for them to start switching over. But let's move to your point, Hari. The third point that we're going to bring up, the third theme in the book, Hari's going to go ahead and discuss.
Sure. So before I talk about the third theme, I just want to add that even though they are not really good at the mobile devices, the phone or the tablets that they have recently released, we have to give them credit for finally solving the computing problem with Amazon Web Services. In fact, Eric Smith, the chairman of Google, gave them credit that what the computer guys couldn't solve, this retailer finally solved it for the customers.
I like how you guys referred to them as the retailer. All right.
Cool. Yeah. So going back to my theme, the final theme that we're going to discuss today, the key takeaway for me from this book and from Jeff is time horizons matter. In fact, this is in the book as well as in an interview that Jeff gave recently. He said, when he says we, it is humans. So if he says, if we think long-term, we can accomplish things we wouldn't otherwise accomplish. He gives an example. He says, if you are asked to solve world hunger in 5 years, you would rightly decline the challenge because you think it's impossible. But he says, if I ask you to solve world hunger in the next 100 years, now, that is a different question altogether, and it's more interesting. So he says that by changing the time horizon and by being persistent, a business or an individual can accomplish things that he would otherwise think are impossible. In fact, one of his friends, Danny Hills, in an interview said that it's not just what just Jeff thinks, but this was what Jeff had in his mind when he started Amazon. For Jeff, Amazon was a multi-decade project. And he believed that he can accomplish his vision if he thought long term. And as you said, Piston, previously, that like how Peter Thiel mentions in his book Zero to One about monopolizing a small market segment, even though your vision might be big, Jeff really embodied that when he started Amazon. He started small, focused on books, really monopolized that industry while others were not paying attention. And then he started expanding out.
He was so focused. This was another point, and it was later in the book that I just was, my eyes were just like, oh my God, this guy's brilliant. He set up a team, which was a competitive advantage team. And what they would do is, let's say that they were one specific niche on his site was selling something, and there was some competitor that was coming along and doing things better. This competitive advantage team, their job was to find somebody out there that was doing something or selling something better than they were, figure out how and why they were doing it, determine whether they could implement that process that this competitor was doing within their own ranks. And if they couldn't, what could they do in order to purchase and buy them out? And what was their strategy in order to do that? And I just was just like, this guy's amazing. Like, it was unbelievable some of the things that he was putting in place and managing within the company at such a large scale, especially later on. It was just fascinating.
Kristen, you brought up a very good point. In fact, Jeff has an interesting take on competitive advantage for Amazon. And he says, we would like to weave a rope of many small advantages to build our moat or our competitive advantage. So that I thought was an interesting take on competitive advantage.
And, you know, this is something that I really took away from it, is his biggest competitive advantage is trust. Like, he doesn't put more value in anything other than trust. It was really near the end of the book. He was talking about how his email marketing team were sending out something, and it could potentially compromise a person if they were looking at something that was like a little off topic on their website, and then they would send out messages later on. And that just really disturbed Bezos. He was really upset that these messages that were going out could potentially break that trust that they had with their customers, and that he didn't really place anything bigger and more important within the company than that trust. And I think that that's his true competitive advantage over anything else, is that he has this trust with the customers, and that people just keep coming back and coming back because they have that trust with the company.
And just something to add here, when Amazon started with the reviews, and I think that's really something that Amazon is famous for here. I know, at least for my part, I like to read reviews before I buy a product on Amazon. The first reviews that was written on Amazon was actually done by the employees of the company. And some of the reviews, which was books back then, were actually negative. And there was a publisher who called up Bezos and told him, what are you doing? You're supposed to sell books. Why are you writing bad reviews? And he's saying, I'm not in the business of selling books. I'm in the business of helping customers to make the right decisions. And I thought that was so strong. And that's really related to this thing about trust that Preston was talking about.
Yep. Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Kyle, you're connected with a ton of different investors and portfolio managers, and you're just really in the know on a lot of these things. How do you keep up with all the day-to-day headlines for your portfolio companies?
Yeah, so I used to have a ton of issues with this, and that was until I started using Yahoo Finance.
Really? What's so great about it?
So Yahoo Finance is awesome. I have my whole portfolio entered, and I can easily see all the top headlines to keep up with the recent news. And each day you get an overview of the major global events that might be moving the market. So I'm ready to easily pounce on any opportunities that come my way.
What else can you do on Yahoo Finance's platform?
They also have a number of cool features, including a tool that lets you link all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings, and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts.
Well, now I know that the audience is really going to love this one. And actually, see, they have 90 million monthly active users.
For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com.
The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. Today's show is sponsored by public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Ally, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account. As many of you know, I love studying businesses and networking with business owners. The more I've studied businesses, the more I've realized that starting and scaling your business is easier than ever because of companies like Shopify. Did you know that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US? Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify even helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. What I personally love about Shopify is that it's the turnkey solution to kickstart and grow your business, and they are totally committed to giving you the necessary tools to succeed as a business owner. Plus, they have an award-winning customer support team there to help you every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/WSB. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/WSB now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/WSB.
All right. Back to the show.
Oh, that's a great point, Stig. I really like that. So I'll tell you, you guys are probably listening to us talk about this and we're kind of jumping all over the place. And it's probably more because this book was so filled with just amazing business information. I mean, it's the Financial Times and Goldman Sachs Business Book of the Year. So if you haven't read this thing and you're interested in business, I'll tell you, you got to get out and read this book. It's unbelievable. I want to really quickly go over one piece here and then we're going to have to try to wrap things up. The one thing that I wanted to cover was Amazon's six core principles. We can't really go into depth kind of describing all of these. And to be honest with you, if you want to really kind of get the full gist and something that's a little bit more organized in the way that we're talking through this, you're going to want to go and download all of our executive summary that Stig and I are putting together. It's about 5 pages long in a PDF format. So you can go to our website and download that. And it's going to be much more organized than really the show notes. But real fast, let's go through these Amazon six core principles. The first one is customer obsession. So that's the one we've kind of already hit on, and that's his very first core principle. The next core principle was frugality, and he talks about how really, I guess the best word is how cheap he was by employing the company's money. If he was going to take a jet ride out to Hawaii for one of his employees or something like that, it was always done on his own dime. He never used company funds in order to do something like that. He was very frugal with the company money and how he employed it. The third one was his bias for action. So this one really kind of covers just having really big and great ideas, but putting a small amount of capital on a small team to try to exercise and start to discover whether there's some traction in that particular area of interest. So he had a bias for action in these different ideas and these different segments that he had come up with. The fourth point that he had was ownership. This kind of goes back to the last book that Stig and I read with A Science of Success with Charles Koch. and that he wants people within his company to think from that ownership standpoint. So you see a lot of very similar themes amongst all these billionaires and these top CEOs, and that's one of them. The next one, which is number five, which also is another one that Charles Koch and Warren Buffett and a bunch of others have, is that they have a very high bar for the talent within their organization. They are looking for the top people and what they've got to do in order to get them, and more importantly, what they've got to do to retain them. And then the very last one is innovation. Jeff Bezos is a very innovative person. He might just have started off as a retailer, but he has some very grandiose ideas, and some of them relate to doing space exploration, to being a technical company that's giving IBM a run for their money, amongst many other things. So those were his six core principles. I wanted to talk about those. And the final thing that we want to discuss on the show, I want to throw it over to Hari because he wants to talk about this relationship between Jeff Bezos and Steve Jobs.
Thanks, Christian. While I was reading the book, a couple of things struck me. And one of them was the parallel between how Jobs operated and thought, and how Jeff has been operating Amazon, and how he thinks. Now, I want to highlight some of the key points that I found were interesting or very similar. The number one, which is common among many entrepreneurs, not just between Jeff and Job, is the drive, intensity, and the vision. Both of them had intense drive, and also they stuck to their vision through thick and thin. And then employees or people gathered around and started following them. Both of them have embraced disruption, in fact, cannibalized their own products. Jobs doing it with iPod when he launched iPhone. Pretty much he cannibalized iPod at that point of time. And Jeff did it with his Kindle business, where he knew it will eventually cannibalize his book retailing business. And he was aware of it, and he did it deliberately. And in fact, he says that it's always better you cannibalize your own business rather than letting somebody else do it for you. And the next one is a relentless focus on customer, in fact, an obsession. And Jeff, in fact, was famous for having an empty chair in a conference room representing the customer. So both of them were obsessed with customers then. As you mentioned earlier, gaining their trust. And the last one, though it's not really important, but is a coincidence in their personal life, is that both of them were separated from their biological fathers at a very early age and adopted by somebody else in case of Steve Jobs. And in case of Jeff Bezos, his mom married another person. But both of them had a very good childhood nonetheless.
Very interesting points, Hari. It's interesting to see both of these gentlemen have a much different approach than like Warren Buffett, who we usually spend a lot of time on. And yet here they are enormously successful in business, but yet they've taken on a different approach and a different model. So, okay, guys, well, let's go ahead and move to our question that was submitted to the show this week. And this question here, we're going to go ahead and read because it was typed up and sent to us. And this question comes from Antoinette Crett. And what she says is that, what is the best way to find companies to evaluate based on Buffett's criteria? Do you use an online stock screener, companies you know, newspapers? What do you guys use? So Stig's going to go ahead and answer this question.
I'd say I probably have three different approaches to finding right stocks. I definitely think that stock screeners are a good idea. You probably looked at it yourself and you can put in inputs like what should the ROE be of the company and what should the price earnings be and these things. So I definitely think that that's a viable strategy. Other than that, I am looking at the filings that investors that I really respect, but they're buying. So for instance, Warren Buffett, he has to file four times a year and telling your public what he's buying. So I would use that as a sheet to go buy one by one and say, is that something with me? Is that within my circle of competence to invest in that company? And then the third thing, I just talk to a lot of people, and if there are some people that I trust, then I will look closer into it. I don't think that necessarily you have to be a billionaire to make good stock picks. But if a trusted source is telling me then that he or she are going into a stock, very often I'll take a closer look at it. With that said, I really want to stress that because Warren Buffett is buying something, or you hear that your best friend is buying something, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't act too much. I think I bought two stocks this year, and I kind of feel like I've been over trading. So you probably also feel that I'm pretty conservative. But I don't think I get all the good ideas myself. I think that you mainly get that from other people.
Stig, that's a great point, because I think a lot of people don't realize how few times we're actually buying a different company. For this past year, I'd say I'm pretty close to where you're at, where I've only really been buying about 4 to 3, maybe different companies throughout the year. Now I'm buying them. I typically only do one purchase per month. So all of my cash flow is put into that one particular pick, but I'm buying the same type of pick over and over again. And I'm not really making a lot of, I'm not picking 20 to 25 different companies here. It's usually pretty focused on companies that I feel are a good price at a particular point in time. And if the market kind of moves in a different direction and something else becomes undervalued, then I might start moving into that and focusing my cash flow into that monthly. So, okay. Go ahead, Hari.
Piston, you brought up a very good point. 13F is a great way to follow a lot of great investors. But the danger or the risk is that you might follow too many of them, and you might start buying a lot of stocks that you can comprehend and you can understand. And you both brought up a really good point that we should limit ourselves to few that we can understand and focus on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're really reading the 10Q and the 10K on these companies, if you own more than 10 or 15 picks, I mean, that's all you'd be doing would be reading these things. So I personally have to keep it to a manageable level. And I mean, when you look at a company like, let's just say Berkshire Hathaway, I mean, he owns, 67 or 70 different operational companies that are on all these different fields. So if you're buying that particular pick, you're literally spreading your money across the breadth of all these different companies, not just an individual pick. Same thing with Amazon. I mean, that's obviously something that I'm not buying because of the profit margin versus everything else, and the capitalization rate on it. But that's a company that's spread across all these different areas. It's not just focused in one particular thing. And so when you're buying an individual pick, or you're buying an index or something like that, you can focus on that one thing if it's a large cap company that has things spread across a breadth of different areas. So just something to think about for people as they go forward. So that concludes our show this week. We would really like to thank Hari Ramachandra for coming on the show. If you'd like to read more about Hari's blog, you can go to bitsbusiness.com. Hari, thanks for joining us. We'd really highly recommend this book. It's called The Everything Store by Brad Stone, and it's all about Jeff Bezos. If you'd like to read our executive summary, if you don't have time to go through the whole book, Stig and I will have that posted on our website. And if you sign up on our mailing list, you'll get all of our executive summaries for all the books that we read. So thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Investors Podcast. To listen to more shows or access to the tools discussed on the show, be sure to visit www.theinvestorspodcast.com. Submit your questions or request a guest appearance to The Investors Podcast by going to www.asktheinvestors.com. If your question is answered during the show, you will receive a free autographed copy of the Warren Buffett Accounting Book. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This material is copyrighted by the TIP Network and must have written approval before commercial application.